My daddy has lots of books, and he likes to read books. And he interviews authors at KAZI. You are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
On today's edition of KAZI Book Review, we are featuring college students reading excerpts of some of their literary work at the Celebration of Diverse Literary Voices of Texas held on January 30th. They are Vanessa Aguirre, a student at the University of Texas at Austin, Kalea Tillman and Bianca Williams, students at Houston-Tilson University, and Vanessa Rose, a student at Austin Community College. We start with Vanessa Rose being introduced by Charlotte Gullick, chair of ACC's Creative Writing Department.
I'm here to introduce Vanessa Rose, who is a creative writing student at Austin Community College. She is in her third class with me. And, you know, it's great because I met her initially on the page via an online class. And just immediately her work was so engaging. And I believe she's going to share a piece that she wrote last semester and a fiction class. So a little bit about Vanessa is that she is a New York native living in Texas and a homeschool mother of three. She enjoys writing short stories and screenplays across genres. Most of her stories are grounded in reality, though she often includes her invented language in her fantasy pieces. So Vanessa, I'm gonna ask you a couple questions and then ask you to read. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for being here today. So can you talk to us a little bit about why you love writing and what you would like to accomplish in your writing career in the next 5 years?
I think I like writing for probably the same reason a lot of people do, is just to all the ideas in your head, just putting them on the page seems to be the best way for me to put them into reality. And the second question, where I'd like to be in 5 years. I've really gotten into screenwriting, so I'd love to see something of mine on a screen somewhere.
This is an off-topic question. Do you have a favorite screenwriter right now? Someone whose work you particularly enjoy?
Not really. That's what I'm trying to find out right now, is see who really inspires me. I've an internship right now with the RTF department, and I'm able to look at a bunch of different scripts, and I'm really enjoying just seeing the different styles of that people are writing in.
Cool. It's great that you're like, I'm in that phase where I'm finding it. Okay. So then what are you going to read to us today?
I'm going to read Worker Bees. We traveled in groups in the safety of our hive, buzzing about the good news in well-groomed uniform modesty. We knocked on doors and smiled, dying inside, flipping through pages and reading and reciting scripture. We were practiced and perfect, polished and pleading for anyone, just anyone to listen, that we could save a soul or ourselves for trying. We were witnesses for the word and witnesses of the world for being ourselves, though never really stepping in it. We were born in the hive, or stolen from freedom at an early age and made to be worker bees, peddling pamphlets and poisoning potential parishioners. We called ourselves other names and learned the language of the hive. We lived separate lives, watching the world collapse in on itself, and heard men frantically finding scripture referencing news to keep us alert, awake. The doom and gloom of our bedtime stories comforted us in the nightmares they made. We might survive. The hum of our parents' voices rocked us asleep with tales of Armageddon. Revelations of beasts and destruction, towers and powers falling, floods and empty promises were the pretty horrors of our lullabies. The repeated depictions and predictions of the world's impending destruction instilled the fear in our little hearts that we would capture our minds, that they would capture our minds before we wandered. We dressed well on Sundays, spinning about in our skirts as the boys tried not to muddy their shoes. We listened for hours with hushed voices, asking children for stationary silence. We squirmed in our seats, restless with wonder and innocence. We followed along and counted his name to make note of all that was important. We listened to brothers and sisters paraphrasing underlined passages and being added to an unspoken list of the spiritually healthy, well-prepared, and theocratically minded friends. Our parents held us on their laps, making us taller as we shot up tiny hands. We waved them in the sea of our elders, giddy with excitement that we might speak a word or two. They laughed at our high-pitched voices, amplified through the hall, and commended our enthusiasm. We prayed and regrouped to walk the town with our little bags, clutching handfuls of paper. They arranged us 2x2 as he did for the ark, that we were clean and packed 7 in a van with our little legs swinging between 3 pairs of adults. We begged to ring the door at every the bell at every door and stepped back, grabbing the hand of a pioneer practiced in proselytizing. They quoted scripture and offered magazines and futile promises of a future with earnest smiling faces. We mimicked their devotion and waited as the stomp of lazy feet grew louder within a house. A once rested face annoyed at our presence opened the door and listened to our baby voices in aggravated obligation. They accepted our papers for the dimples in our cheeks while leering at the adults proudly presenting us. We skipped off oblivious to the form we were bending into. We congregated at bakeries and fast food restaurants and were rewarded for our parroted zeal. They spoke of signs warning of dogs and soliciting, encountered with scripture instructing us to bring news to all our neighbors. Our feet ached from the territory we marched and covered finding slammed doors and uninterested inhabitants. We bowed our heads at mealtime, before bed, before being sent off door to door, before a man stood on a podium, and as a break before another took his spot and spoke words we'd heard before. We conversed with someone above by hanging our heads low and squeezed our eyes shut in humility, desperately asking for our words to be heard for listening to his. We were told we were no part of this world, so we kept our distance. They could point us out by how we were segregated at holidays and birthdays, reading books in the hallways while our classmates munched on heart-shaped candies and bit the belly of a jolly fat man covered in red and green frosting. We silently salivated over treats and eavesdropped on the tricks our classmates planned for the night. They handed birthday invitations past our crestfallen faces to classmates who they knew could attend. We feigned apathy while quietly longing for the simplicity of normalcy.
Thank you so much. I just have one question before we move on to the next folks. Do you read your work out loud when you're writing it?
Not really. I probably should.
No.
Not a little better.
No. One of the reasons I asked is because there's so much effective alliteration and preposition. We up the down like you did. It's very, the sound quality of what you just read is really striking. So I was just wondering if you were inviting your ear into your writing process. That's all. Thank you so much, Vanessa. Really appreciate that you read that.
Now we're going to turn it over to Danielle McGee with Houston Tillerson University.
I'm here today to present to you two students from Houston Tillotson University. I will start with Bianca Williams. She is a graduating senior at Houston Tillotson, and she is currently an English and communications major born here in Austin, Texas. And she has plans of moving to LA to pursue a career in music and writing. And her current favorite author is Paulo Coelho. And she notes here that she really loves Mexican food and that her favorite hobbies includes reading great books, making music, and writing a lot, and going to school. And Kalea Tillman, whom you heard from earlier today, is from, as she's noted here, the great city of Dallas, Texas. And she is a graduating senior at Houston Tillotson. She enjoys studying English. She studies English writing, arts, and African-American studies. She's developed a passion for writing at a very young age and will soon be embarking on a journey to pursue a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing. And she aspires to be an entrepreneur, a young adult fiction author, and an English professor. So for the both of you, Kalia and Bianca, can you explain why you love writing and what you would like to accomplish in your writing career in the next 5 years?
I'll let you go first, Bianca.
Okay, I was sitting here like, I don't know if she's going to want to go first. But okay, I'll go. For me, I just love writing because it's like whatever's in my head, I can create a world, you know, that's to my design, basically. I can pour out whatever I'm thinking and make it whatever I want and have complete creative control about it and make it. There's just so many different ways that you can say things and color your words. So for me, it's just a huge freedom of expression. And it's just something that I love to do that like calms me. And I just love it because of how much freedom it gives you and things that you can do with your words and put it into writing. And plans for myself in the future, I plan on moving to LA. Similar to Miss Vanessa Rose in the chat, I have a very big passion for screenwriting and movies and music. So I plan to pursue all of that to the fullest and hopefully make that move to LA someday to be a creative out there.
And I as well love writing for the very reason that Bianca loves it, just the freedom of expression. I love the phrase she used to be able to color my words and to really make them as abstract or as clear or as concise or as long as I want to make them, and to be able to tell my story. As the great Nikki Giovanni said earlier, knowing what your story is, being able to tell it how, you know, even the Bible tells us there's nothing new under the sun. So I love the fact that I'm able to tell my story to encourage, to inspire, and to show other people that they're not alone in this world. Not that their stories are not unique, but that if they find themselves in a certain situation, they can look to writing, they can look to something that has already been penned and be inspired and know that they have a better way out. And in the next 5 years, I hope to be teaching. I really want to go back and teach at my HBCU, HT. So hopefully I get the opportunity to teach at HT. And I want to also be an established author. I want to write young adult fiction. As I stated earlier, and as Ms. Danielle said, I want to write young adult fiction and just be an inspiration to people my age.
Thank you. So we'll start with you, Bianca. If you could give an explanation of what you were going to be reading today, and you can jump right in and read an excerpt from your work.
Yep, sounds good. So today for you guys, I picked one of my favorite creative pieces that I've written. It's called Gin. And basically, it's the story of a girl and how she ends up coming to meet a gin, basically, in the world that she's living in. So it's very adventurous. It's definitely really creative, kind of magical. And that's the kind of genre that I tend to live in when I'm writing my work. So I'll just begin with that. I awake once more to this new and different world. The sun streams through my window and I can see tiny particles of dust floating in its rays. It's New Year's Day, I think to myself, and I'm all alone. You see, my family disappeared. Don't ask me why. I haven't the slightest clue as to how something like that could ever happen. But apparently so did everyone else here on good old planet Earth. Everyone except for me. This all went down about 7 days ago and the world has been silent ever since. I sit up in my room, the bed and rays streaming directly into my eyes, and glance around. The same colorful wallpaper that has coated my walls remains, seeming more dull today than usual. I scratch my head and push my coily hair out of my eyes, the four walls surrounding me feeling more like a prison than in my own home, and head downstairs for food. I was really freaked out in the beginning. This whole disappearing thing really gave me the heebie-jeebies, but now the silence is just eerie. It's a strange thing to be alone. I mean, truly alone, to be with nothing and no one else except your own thoughts. I glance around my empty house, remembering all the good memories that took place here with my family. The silence is maddening. I start a pot of coffee, immersing myself in the sound of the coffee dripping into the glass, as it's now the only thing I can seem to grasp onto. I stare off into the distance and begin to question my sanity. I fiddle with the coffee pot, looking out of my kitchen window for any sign of life, but there was nothing, not even a bug. This felt like something you would read about in a book. I slammed the coffee lid, realizing it wasn't caffeine that I wanted. It was noise. I wanted to hear the commotion of people, some type of interaction to distract me from my own thoughts. I wanted traffic, an annoying lawnmower. Heck, at this point, even the neighbor's kids screaming and running around buck wild in their backyard on a Saturday morning would do. I wanted to hear anything other than nothing. So I screamed. I screamed long and loud, and I screamed over and over until my throat was raw and tears streamed down my face. That's when I heard it, loud and beautiful, the doorbell. After 7 days of pure isolation, it rang. Someone was ringing my doorbell. It was comical and sort of terrifying. After 7 days of being the last human being on the planet, someone had rung my doorbell, or something had. I peeled myself off the floor, an icy wave of terror now seeping into my stomach, and sprinted to it, tripping over furniture and hitting the wall in a rush to peep out of the small slit in the blinds and glare at whoever or whatever was stuck with me now on this lonely planet. And there stands a tall Arabian boy with floppy black hair, who I go to school with. My eyes grows to the size of melons as I scramble to the door and fling it wide open. There stands this boy, his hair frazzled and shirt tasseled in a mess. He stands there with a ruined bouquet of flowers and begins to stammer, entirely choking on his own words, as if he can't find the words to speak. He looks so familiar, yet I can't put my finger on where I know him from in my school. We never ran into each other much, this I know for certain, but yet he seems so familiar. At this moment, it dawns on me. My heart falls all the way to my toes and my blood runs cold as I relive the memory. It was the last day of school before winter break when this very boy had asked me on a date. Me, being the pig-headed brat that I was, had laughed right in his face as the wretched words escaped my mouth. "I wouldn't go out with you if you were the last person on earth," I sneered in his face, causing the entire cafeteria to erupt with laughter, and he trudged away with a broken heart. I shook my head, guilt flooding through my veins, and gave a small laugh as I looked him in his bright green eyes. Here we were. He was very much the last person on earth, as was I. So that's all I have right now, but it's going to go into a really long tale about how this all happened and how the genie comes into play and all of that.
I want to read more.
Thank you.
Okay. Great, Bianca and Kalea.
Go ahead, Kalea. Just explain what you'll be reading and give us an excerpt of your work.
Yes, I'll give a short synopsis of my work. I decided that I'm going to be reading an excerpt from my senior thesis that I wrote last semester. It's a novella that confronts the issue of police brutality through the narrative of the president's daughter. Marissa Walker is the daughter of the newly elected president, President Reginald Walker, who is the second Black president of the United States of America. Marissa comes face to face with police brutality when she leaves the White House unattended by her bodyguard with her best friend, Anthony Smith, who is a young activist, student, and motivational speaker. They get pulled over by the police, and Anthony is murdered by Officer Grant Parrish in the crossfire of racial profiling, police brutality, and American racism. It was 3 days ago. I never thought that something like this would happen to me. Pow! It was the loudest sound I had ever heard. I dropped to my knees and ducked. Pow, pow, pow! There was a loud cracking sound. "I told you to get on the ground, boy," the officer barked. My friend, the boy he was referring to, his name was Anthony Smith. Anthony dropped next to me. I crouched with my head tucked under my hands the way they taught us to do during tornado drills at school. I could feel my left knee get wet and it was warm, but I knew not to move until the drill was over. It wasn't over. I didn't open my eyes and I didn't budge. I could hear my heartbeat. And a woman screamed to the top of her lungs, "You murdered him, you sick bastard, you murdered him, and I got you on video." More people screamed. Someone grabbed me and pulled me up by my right arm, dragging me away from my friend. But I kept my eyes sealed. I was petrified, but I hadn't realized what had just happened. My ears rang. When I opened my eyes, I was in the back seat of a car. It was a cop car. The left knee of my blue jeans, the wet one, was covered in a red substance that had begun to dry around the corner, around the perimeter. And specks of that same red covered my arm like chicken pox. The red also dotted my sweater. And I finally realized that it was blood. Was I hit? I felt all over my body for the injury, but nothing. I looked around at the crowd forming on the sidewalks. Their phones were drawn, some facing me and some toward the scene in front of the cop car. I pulled the handle to get out to see the scene for myself, but the door was locked. So I stood as tall as I could in front of the middle seat. I could see it then. Anthony was there, laying as still as the ground, covered in blood, the same color as the blood on me. There was so much blood that he was almost floating in it. A cop stood over him with both hands gripping his gun, still pointing it at Anthony. Another cop stood a few feet away, close to the cop car. The crowd fussed and yelled. I heard sirens, and that was when it hit me. The cop with the gun shot my friend, right next to me, and my friend's blood was all over me. When Sid arrived at the scene, he darted towards me. The cop standing by the car, I could see his badge number 788, turned towards Sid. Before he could bellow anything, Sid barked, "Secret Service!" He picked me up out of the car and shielded me while he sped over to our state car. He held me in the back seat as we drove past the roaring crowds. "You don't have to say a word to anyone until you're ready. You know your rights." "I'm scared, Sid." "We're all scared, but I've got you." Then I'm going to skip down to the end. Further information related to an ongoing investigation, my dad comes in. "Dad, I know Marissa. We got all the information. The officers were searching for a Black man driving a dark Elantra that had just robbed a convenience store. An Elantra similar to Anthony's. So they stopped y'all. But just as they were approaching the car, they received a message that the suspect had been spotted 3 blocks away, driving a Black Elantra. Anthony's is navy blue. Officer Parrish knew to stand down. He chose not to. Both officers are being handcuffed as we speak. I'm so sorry, sweetie. I can't act like I'm okay anymore. I can't act like this feels like justice. I can't act like this doesn't hurt. Every day I've been praying that God would show me that I could have what I could have done better to spare Anthony's life. Now I just wish that God would show me where Anthony was taking me. I wish that Anthony's white liberal friends wouldn't have told him, wouldn't have asked him to give a speech on race unity. I wish that I wouldn't have been so easy, it wouldn't have been so easy to leave the White House. I thought that maybe we could have done something differently. Maybe I could have just asked to leave, or he could have asked to come in. But I just want to be free, free from these four walls. I failed to remember that even if I got free from this White House, or free from these blue chains, I will never be free from these black walls. Thank you.
Vanessa Aguirre has been writing since elementary school. After a kid in her fourth grade class said she wouldn't be able to write as well as everyone else because English was her second language. So she participated in a state essay competition, fell in love with writing, and won first place. She's now a psychology and Plan 2 senior at the University of Texas at Austin and hopes to pursue a career that promotes underrepresented voices and joy as a form of resistance. So Vanessa, welcome to the 5th Annual Celebration of Diverse Literary Voices of Texas. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Bianca and Kalea for doing such a wonderful job with their writings and Vanessa Rose. So I'm gonna go ahead and give a hand to the three preceding student writers. Thank you so much for coming out and sharing your work with us. So Vanessa, talk a little bit about your love of writing and where you hope to be in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. I fell in love with writing really as a way of, everything that the previous panelists have said, I completely agree. And then I also see writing as a really great way of interacting with reality, either by escaping it and showing like how the world can be better, or also just like, I really like speculative fiction. So like fantasy, science fiction, horror. And I think those are really great vehicles of showing something that may be normalized in society and like having us look at it in a different way, in a different world, using like maybe a different lens through it. So I really like writing because it's just a great way of interacting with my world and seeing new possibilities.
So why don't you go ahead and share the background of the piece that you're about to read? And then the piece.
Okay. Oh, and I forgot to answer the second one, but I really want to be published in 5 years. I ideally want to be published in like a speculative fiction magazine, like Uncanny Magazine or Strange Horizons. I would really love that. But yes, and my piece is part of my senior thesis, which is on Latinx speculative fiction. With an emphasis on fiction that's not magical realism or like cartel violence, because those are very important, but I just want to show that Latinx authors can do more than just that, and they have. And so this is a fantasy story set in a colonial Mexico-inspired world, and was inspired by me wondering what would happen if a chosen one, like the typical fantasy trope of a chosen one, had parents who actually cared about what they were doing and that this 12-year-old was going off to save the world. And so this follows a mom who realized that a mage from the kingdom has chosen her son to be the chosen one. And she has to try to protect her son and like deal with having to raise a son in a society that's very machista and very like war oriented and trying to, you know, keep him alive. So I will read. And it's called The Martyrdom of Jimena de las Rojas. The morning of the ceremony, Jimena finishes piling the last of the firewood scraps into the shed and only pauses by the doorway to make sure she put aside the tools correctly. This is when a supporting beam from the roof crashes tip first right in front of her. The wood dives past her face so closely it scrapes the top of her nose. The father of her son cobbled together this shed. So when compounded with the fact that the structure is over a decade old, she isn't terribly shocked. What's odd is that the beam had fallen much like a spear. On closer inspection of the top of the wood, she sees a speck small magic circle etched on the left edge, still dark with the trace of recent itchisels. Inside the circle is a triangle, three smaller rings engraved on its sharp points. She takes one step forward and stands on top of the vicious hole in the ground left by the beam, imagining what would have happened if she hadn't stopped to check the tools. She stays there for a moment, dust motes dancing in the late morning light. Then she takes a deep breath, brushes the dust from her apron, and gingerly exits the shed. She would have liked to dab some ointment on her nose, maybe hide the beam and its magic far away, but she doesn't have time. Juani will be sad if she misses the ceremony, even if he won't admit it, and he'll be disappointed enough once the proceedings end. A few months ago, the great and most honorable mage of the royal military, Alonso de Ojeda, breezed into Jimena's tiny village like a velvet-clad curse and said, "Please, just Alonso, we're all compatriots here." If it weren't for his indomitable air of importance and the royal soldiers accompanying him, he would have been dismissed as a charlatan. The mountains surrounding Las Rojas appear on maps, if only because they contain a path between the greater northern cities and port towns. But the village itself is often overlooked. Not many visit. The few who do are typically military recruiters or small performer troops. So perhaps the mage's visit is really no different. It's perhaps an unfair comparison. They're her countrymen, compatriotas, de Ojeda said. And regardless of the authenticity of the statement, even Jimena has a hard time imagining them actively harming her or any of the other townspeople. The mage's visit shouldn't have been too unexpected either. Their kingdom is losing the war. When kingdoms start losing wars, king's mages start looking for the chosen one to save them all. War is a cycle. She just hates what they bring, both the mage and the soldiers accompanying him. Juani, who is as taken with the stories of war as any other child, will be inconsolable once they leave. De Ojeda had stood on the platform in the center of the town square used for executions and plays. So those watching had to angle their head upwards to look at the royal seal scroll float before him and unfurl like a banner. In a confident and steady voice, he announced that his divinations on the prophesied savior's location had led him to this very village. He commended the townspeople for their continued devotion to the king and nobility. Surely their faith was a reason humble peasants like themselves had been blessed with this pivotal role in the war. He stretched his arm, soaking in the bright eyes and frenzied whispers of his crowd. Most of those in Las Rojas had never seen magic before. Magic was only for the nobles of the battlefield, for the service of king and country and glory. To use magic otherwise was dishonorable. A mirror surfaced from the platform as if the wood were only mist. Brilliant gold and pearl embossed its edges. Its surface glistened like hand-spun glass. Jimena had never seen anything so ugly. In 2 moons' time, the mage said, those who dare may approach the mirror and see their destiny. Ultimately, they will all see who is chosen to save them from the evil of their enemies outside the kingdom. Mama, Juani had breathed, excitement widening his eyes. Mama, I want to be chosen. Do you think I could be chosen? Back then, as if it were long ago, Juani did not yell recoil from his mother's hugs, though Jimena had gathered him into her arms and entertained never letting go.
One of the questions I have for each of you, and maybe we'll go in the order that we read, if that's cool, until we get some other questions in the chat boxes. Do you each have a writing tip for, how do you get yourself to write even when you don't want to write? Like, what is it that gets you going? You know, because procrastination, or I want it to be better than it is already, or does the world even care? Like, what gets you to sit down and do it? So Vanessa Rose, can you answer that first?
I don't know if this is like a professional way of doing it, but lately I've been just trying to look at kind of, I don't know if you call them like confessionals or testimonials of people who have gone through similar experiences that I have, like just random YouTube clips or something. And just hearing that it's an echo, like, oh, someone else has had that before. Cause a lot of times you think, you know, oh, that's just what I think. So then hearing, oh no, someone else has had that experience, it kind of inspires me. It's worth writing.
That seems very professional. And I think whatever works is professional, as long as it doesn't involve self-harm. Like, I'm here to undo the myth that writers need to drink. So Bianca?
For me, it can be difficult sometimes, but one thing that really helps me is reading other people's work to inspire me. Sometimes when I lose, like, you know, what perspective I want to write it from or what story do I want to tell, I go and read other people's stories and get ideas and take from that. And if I'm really stumped, then I'll be like, okay, you read this story. What would that sound like if you told it from your perspective, you know? Or I take things from other people's work and try to rework it and mold it and incorporate it into my own. Yeah, that helps me a lot.
That's awesome. Thank you. Kalia?
So for me, I go and I do something that I love, do something that I know makes me happy. Food is always the way to go. I like to go out and I like to get fresh air to, you know, when I'm feeling down or feeling like, oh, I don't want to work or I don't want to finish this story, or if it's an essay, something as simple as an essay, I will go out, I will get some fresh air, find me some good food, maybe some seafood or some good Cajun food. And I would just bask in that moment of just glory. And then afterwards, like, I find like this reset on the inside of me and I just push myself to the end.
Awesome. I think that walking is an under discussed part of writing if one is able bodied, and that, you know, going to walk and think about things that your brain can get away from the words for a little while. And food. Okay. Thank you. Vanessa?
Yeah, I mean, all of that. I also walk or run sometimes if I just can't figure out a story. And I listen to music that I think suits the mood of the story. Like, I create playlists, which is honestly just another form of procrastinating, but it helps sometimes to like get more inspiration. And then sometimes you have to write for yourself, I think, or at least for me, I just write for myself at the beginning. Cause if I think about like how other people are going to take it or whether it's important, or like, I'll just freeze up. So I just say like, I would like to read this. So I'm going to write for the me of the future who's going to read this. And then in editing, I figure out where it fits in the world later.
So I just want to repeat what you said, because it was so powerful. I write for the future me that's going to need this. Is that what you said?
Yes.
There's a writer named Melissa Fives, and she says, write the book that you needed when you were young. So it's that like, that. Awesome. Thank you. The question is, who are your favorite writers? And just to change it up a little bit, Bianca, will you go first?
Yeah. So I really have two right now that I love. One that I've loved ever since I was a kid, and my most recent one. So my most recent favorite author is Paulo Coelho.
Oh, yeah.
Love him. I recently read The Alchemist. I think I read it maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I fell in love with that book. So that is my favorite book at the moment right now. And then my second one is going to be Neil Shusterman. He is a young fiction, science fiction writer, and he has the author of the book Unwind. And it's a super interesting book. If you love science fiction, those types of worlds, you'll really love this book. So those are my two favorite ones right now.
Awesome. Thank you. And you had said that earlier in your intro. And I just wrote it down. I'm really trying to learn Spanish, and I'm looking for books to read, and then that would be a good one to read in Spanish. So thank you for reminding me, because I loved it.
It's a beautiful novel. It's like, it's just my favorite right now.
Cool. Thank you. Kalia?
As I mentioned earlier, my all-time favorite author is Sharon Draper. She reminds me of my childhood, and honestly, her work is just, it speaks to me. It feels so natural. It just feels, and because she writes a lot about African-American students, and I've been an African-American student for most of my life, so I really connect with her work. And I also recently found a love for Isabel Wilkerson. I read last semester, we read in my in one of my African-American studies courses, we read The Warmth of Other Suns, and I loved it. I just loved how she was able to take the Great Migration and tell the story of the Great Migration through fictional characters. And it amazed me how she was able to literally tell the story in its complete truth through fiction. And I watched a video of her explaining how she did it. She talked about how she interviewed over 100 older people who were a part of the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. And she even relived some of the experiences that they talked about in their interviews. She drove, you know, she would just go get the car that the person, one of the people said that they drove in the interview, and she got the car and she made the drive from, you know, the south to the north. And I'm just like, that is just so amazing how you can really become engulfed in your work, and even fiction can become so real to you. So I really have just connected with Isabel Wilkerson.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Vanessa Aguirre?
I'd say the author that's coming to mind right now is Kazuo Ishiguro, because he wrote Never Let Me Go. And that was the first book that really made me realize the power of, like, specifically science fiction and fantasy to, like, have you read something that seems totally outlandish or like just a completely different world, and then have you think, oh, wait, is there something like that happening in, like, our world now? So it was this really, like, tragic, slow dystopia that made me wonder, oh my gosh, am I acting like that? Or, like, is our world like that as well? So that book, Never Let Me Go, highly recommend. It's gorgeous. And then I also have the utmost, like, admiration for Sylvia Moreno-Garcia. She wrote she's written a lot of books, but the most recent book I read was Mexican Gothic and Gods of Jade and Shadow. And she really was one of the first, like, Latinx authors I read that was, like, not in magical realism. And she really made this, like, beautiful fantasy world set in, like, 1920s Jazz Age Mexico. And, like, made me just seeing all these things from, like, my family's culture, like seeing the love interest wear a chattel suit was just so cool. Like having it be romanticized, like, you know, Western European fantasy is, was just really amazing. So highly recommend them because they're gorgeous.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Vanessa Rose?
I haven't read it in years, but what really inspired me to start writing when I was younger was Lucy Maud Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables. Just the way that Anne herself in the story was a writer, and the way that she would just colorfully just look at something and had this, like, creative way of saying it. And it really matched my, you know, outlook on the world and how I would describe things. But lately, and you introduced me to this, Justin Torres, his book, We the Animals. I really enjoyed that a lot more than I thought I would. And that's what inspired the piece that I wrote. Just the way that he used language, it just seemed like such an authentic and raw way of speaking.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We have just, like, 2 minutes left. I don't know, Danielle, did you have a book that you just really want to recommend to folks?
I am a big fan of, it's one of her first book, but I just really love Yaa Gyatso's book, Homegoing. It's one of my favorite go-tos just to kind of get reconnected to your roots. And I like the ways in which she wrote the book and how it's written based on generations and from different, once you read the story, you'll understand, but she writes from a perspective of someone who lives in Africa versus a family member who lives in America. Mm. And it's kind of intergenerational. So it's a really unique way of writing. So I really enjoyed the format of that book. So that's one of my recommendations. And I also wrote a book called Every Girl Poops. It's a book of poetry, of short poems from a woman's perspective, a humorous woman's perspective. So it's a good book of poems to read while you're hanging out in the bathroom.
So. Awesome. Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank all the students for sharing their work and to Hopeton for giving them the opportunity. And it's been really cool to go into these different worlds and to hear how you get through your challenges with writing. So thank you all so much.
All right, real quick, before we shut down or get ready to go to our next panel, I want Kalia, Vanessa, Bianca, and the other Vanessa, we have two Vanessas here, real quickly, what book are you currently reading? And let's start with, I'm just going to look at the screen here, Kalia.
I'm not going to even lie. I'm currently reading the Bible. Honestly, I'm trying to get through the Bible. So I'm literally focusing on the Bible because I've literally put every focus on everything else but the Bible. And so that's really the book I'm focusing on.
Beautiful. Vanessa?
Which one?
Oh, Vanessa Rose.
I'm currently not reading a book, but a screenplay. I'm reading over Arrival and just trying to look at how they dealt with the language of the aliens in that story.
Very good. Bianca?
I'm reading the Gita right now, actually. I thought it was very, it's an interesting thing. And a lot of my friends right now are really studying in like comparative religions and Hinduism and things like that. So I'm taking a stab at actually reading the Gita.
Excellent. Vanessa, Aguirre?
I'm currently reading a kid's book, Amari and the Knight Brothers, which I'm having a lot of fun with. It's like Men in Black meets Harry Potter. It's just a really nice, magical book.
Well, thank you again to Danielle McGee and Charlotte Gullick for bringing the students together from Austin Community College and Houston Tillson University, Vanessa Rose, Kalia Tillman, Bianca Williams. And thank you, Vanessa Aguirre from the University of Texas at Austin, and John Moran Gonzalez, who's the director of the Center for Mexican American Studies at the University of Texas at Austin, for recommending Vanessa. And by the way, Vanessa will be introducing our diverse scholars Speaking Truth to Power panel coming up this afternoon. Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. Subscribe to us under Hopeton Hay Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other sources of podcasts. If you like this interview, be sure to rate it. Rate it a 5. Give us 5 stars. You can follow KAZI Book Review on Twitter under @KAZIBooks. You can also follow us under Facebook under KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay. And you can also follow us on Instagram under KAZI_book_review. Thank you once again for listening to the KAZI Book Review podcast.